スデバヤ。オムナモバガバテバスデバヤ。オムナモバガバテバスデバヤ。Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 10, entitled Shiva and Uma Glorify Markandeya, text number 35. Suta Uvacha Iti Archito, sorry, Iti Archito Abhishtutascha Munina Suktaya Gira Tam Aha Bhagavan Sharva Sharvaya Chabhinanditaha. Suta Uvacha. Suta Goswami said, Iti, in these words, Architaha, worship. Abhishtutaha, glorified, cha, and munina, by the sage, suktaya, well spoken, gira, with words, tam, to him, aha, spoke, Bhagavan Sharvaha, Lord Shiva, Sharvaya, by his consort, Sarva, by his consort Sarva, cha, and Abhinanditaha, encouraged. Translation by the servants of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Suta Goswami said, thus worshipped and glorified by the eloquent statements of the sage Markandeya, Lord Sarva, Shiva, encouraged by his consort, replied to him as follows. Text number 36. There's no purport to this one. So I'll read till the end of the chapter. There's no purport, and the second last verse has a purport. O great sage, because you are devoted to Lord Adhokshaja, all your desires will be fulfilled. Until the very end of this creation cycle, you will enjoy pious fame and freedom from old age and death. Text number 37. O Brahmana, may you have perfect knowledge of past, present and future, along with transcendental realization of the Supreme, enriched by renunciation. You have the brilliance of an ideal Brahmana, and thus you may achieve the post of spiritual master of the Puranas. Text number 38. Suta Goswami said, having thus granted Markandeya Rishi benedictions, Lord Shiva went on his way, continuing to describe to Goddess Devi the accomplishments of the sage and the direct exhibition of the Lord's illusory power that he had experienced. Text number 39. Markandeya Rishi, the best of the descendants of Bhrigu, is glorious because of his achievement of perfection in mystic yoga. Even today he travels about this world, fully absorbed in unalloyed devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I have thus narrated to you the activities of the highly intelligent sage Markandeya, especially how he experienced the amazing power of the Supreme Lord's illusory energy. Text 41. Although this event was unique and unprecedented, some unintelligent persons compare it to the cycle of illusory material existence the Supreme Lord has created for the conditioned souls, an endless cycle that has been continuing since time immemorial. Purport. Markandeya is being drawn into the Lord's body by his inhalation and expelled again by his exhalation should not be considered a symbolic description of the perennial cycles of material creation and annihilation. This portion of the Srimad Bhagavatam describes a real historical event experienced by a great devotee of the Lord. And those trying to relegate the story to mere symbolic allegory are here described to be unintelligent fools. Text number 42, which is the last verse. O best of the Bhrigus, this account concerning Markandeya Rishi conveys the transcendental potency of the Supreme Lord. Anyone who properly narrates or hears it will never again undergo material existence, which is based on the desire to perform fruitive activities. Thus end the purpose of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 12th canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled, Lord Shiva and Uma Glorify Markandeya Rishi. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakya Chakshur Unmintamena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So we are in the 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, of the 12th canto, which is the very last canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So there's another 3 chapters to go, and then Srimad Bhagavatam concludes over there, and then we start again the first canto. So I don't know how many years it took to go through all the 12 cantos, but Srila Prabhupada had this Srimad Bhagavatam class, so we can actually hear the glories of the Lord and get an opportunity to recite the glories of the Lord. For hearing and chanting about the Lord is the very life and soul of the devotees, because that actually keeps us immune from the infection of the material energy. So in this chapter, which is entitled Shiva and Uma Glorify Markandeya, so from memory, what I read, that is, correct me if I'm wrong, that Markandeya had the desire to see the illusory energy of the Lord, and Lord Krishna, he actually fulfilled his desire, and he was thrown in the ocean of devastation for a very long period of time, and then, as we were hearing in the class yesterday, that till he got frustrated that he didn't want to experience it anymore, that he came out of it. So, and then he's sitting and meditating, and Lord Shiva and his wife Uma are flying above, and they actually, Goddess Uma, she sees him, and she points out that there's a sage in trance, and it looks very peaceful. And then Lord Shiva smiled, and he began to glorify this devotee. And then they both of them come down, and because he was in so much trance, though Lord Shiva was present right in front of him, who's one of the best devotees of Krishna, Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu. So, and he was there, he and Goddess Parvati, who are in charge of this material creation. So they were there, but still he was in so much trance that he wasn't aware of the presence, because he was in trance. Just like we see, even when Maharaj Parikshit, when he was hunting in the forest and he was hungry and thirsty, he went to this Brahmana's hermitage, and there this Brahmana, what's the Brahmana's name? Samika, yes, thank you. So he was in trance, and he wasn't aware of his external environment or external surroundings. So similarly, when Lord Shiva went, Markandeya Rishi wasn't aware. But it is described that Lord Shiva actually entered his heart by his mystic powers, and then in his meditation, he was able to see Lord Shiva with 10 arms and holding different the Dumru and holding different things. And then he actually became conscious that, and he asked, who are you? And then he became conscious that is Lord Shiva. And then he came out of his samadhi and he came to external consciousness. And there he saw Lord Shiva and Goddess Uma. And then he offered his obeisances. And as described, he offered them a very nice reception by, in the Vedic culture, if somebody comes to your place, they are meant to be offered a reception, even if they are your enemy. So this is actually very hard to understand these days. If somebody is your enemy, how can you treat them so nicely and offer them a reception? And we see that when the battle of Kurukshetra was taking place, the Kauravas and the Pandavas, the two opposing sides, they would fight all day, and then in the evening they would visit each other's camp, and they would have, you know, food and drink together, and be talking and joking. So it's actually very, very difficult for us to comprehend this. How do they treat the enemy in such a way? As if nothing has happened. Then the next day they are fighting and they're killing each other. So from you know, by reading the Vedic texts, we can actually have a glimpse into the Vedic culture. How exalted the Vedic culture is, that even the enemies are treated so nicely. What to speak of a guest who is not your enemy? So we see when Markandeya Rishi was there, and of course that's Lord Shiva, is the controller of material nature, and he offered him a nice reception, kind words, and described, he offered him an arati like that. And then Lord Shiva said that because Lord Shiva was very pleased with him, Lord Shiva glorified Markandeya Rishi and he offered him benedictions. And as Burijan Prabhu was mentioning yesterday, that if we imagine ourselves to be in prison, which we are in the material prison, but if we imagine that we are in a prison within the prison, if we are in a prison house, then, and if the controller of the prison or whoever is in charge comes to us, and then, you know, we will actually ask that personality to free us, because that personality has full control over the prison. You know, even if we make friends with the guards or know people here and there, but who don't have any authority or position in the prison, they cannot actually really free us. Maybe they can make us stay a little bit more comfortable by sneaking in some bread or, you know, whatever you need. So, but if the prisoner approaches the person who's in charge of the prison, but that person can actually free us, or free that person. So similarly, we are actually, as Burijan Prabhu was mentioning, similarly we are within a prison. But the problem is, we are thinking that this prison is very nice, that we are actually quite comfortable with this prison. And Krishna, who is the proprietor and the controller of this prison, he actually comes once in a day of Brahma. And he also sends his representatives. Krishna is the original spiritual master, and he sends his representatives to actually free us from this prison. And they actually, and he sends all the shastras, the Vedic texts, which inform us about the nature of the prison. But the problem is, even after hearing about it, we are still thinking that this prison has something to offer, something substantial to offer. So as Queen Kunti says, that unless one is materially exhausted, we cannot take to the process of devotional service full-heartedly, as long as we are not materially exhausted. So being materially exhausted means to have no hope from the material energy. That material energy will offer us some security, some comfort, and some pleasures. So the purpose of material nature is actually to frustrate our desires. That's the whole purpose of material energy. So we are thinking the material energy has something to offer, but what it really has to offer is to frustrate our desires. So material nature, which is ultimately, which is the controller, is Durga Devi or Uma and Lord Shiva. So they actually have a thankless task of actually frustrating the material desires and smashing all the plans. Because at every moment we are making plans for happiness. So, and we're making plan after plan, and the happiness and distress which we are getting is that actually comes automatically. In other words, we don't desire distress, but it comes. Similarly, nobody desires happiness, or we desire happiness, but it comes anyway. So we can understand that happiness and distress, at least philosophically we can understand that happiness and distress, they are coming automatically due to our past fruitive activities. So an intelligent person does not actually endeavor for that. So the purpose of the material energy is actually to smash all our desires and to make us materially exhausted. So Durga Devi and Lord Shiva have been trying for a long time and they keep and still trying. So it's a very, very thankless task they're performing. And here in this section we can see that Lord Shiva is actually offering benedictions to Markandeya Rishi, because here Markandeya Rishi, he said, I don't need any benedictions. You know, the fact that I've seen you is a benediction in itself. But he says, however, I want one benediction, that I want to have an unfailing devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and for His dedicated devotees, especially you. So from this we can actually understand that this is the caliber of a real devotee. Because a real devotee is not, or as the fourth chapter of Nectar of Devotion describes, that how devotees are not interested in liberation. So in this material world, everyone is interested in sense gratification, in fulfilling their desires for sense gratification in various ways. So through opulence or relationships or different kind of maneuvers, everyone is trying to fulfill their desires. And everyone is trying to become very prominent in the world. So that's a sign of trying to lord it over others. So trying to become very prominent in whatever field of activities we are situated in. So Srila Prabhupada says everyone wants to become, people want to become, take the post of the minister so they can have more opportunity to lord it over. So in different ways people are trying to do that. Everyone is trying to get on top of each other. But liberation means to try to become one with God. So as it was being mentioned yesterday, how that as Bhurjan Prabhu was mentioning that the Jnani is a personality who actually understands that this material prison house is not a nice place and he wants to get out of it. So the Jnanis are actually desiring to become one with the Lord, in the sense that that's also competing with God. So the desire for becoming one with the Lord and for sense gratification is actually the same thing, but one is worse than the other. So the desire to become one with the Lord is much worse than trying to lord it over the resources of nature. Because in that one is thinking that, okay, I'll become one with God and therefore I'm everything and I have full control over everything. So that's the last layer of the illusory energy. So but pure devotees are actually not interested in that. So throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are so many prayers by pure devotees in which they are showing that they are actually not interested in any of the pleasures of this material world. They're not interested in liberation and they're not even interested in the five kinds of liberation. You know, the five kinds of liberation are to become one with the Lord, to desire to have a body like the Supreme Lord's, to have the same opulences as the Supreme Lord, to reside on the same planet as the Supreme Lord. And what's the last one? Yeah, that's done. To have the same features. So this comes as body, yeah. So same features, same opulence, residing on the same planet, become one with the Lord.
Association,
yeah. And to associate with the Lord, to be around the Lord all the time. Like you're a personal servant of your spiritual master, so like that you are around the Lord all the time. So pure devotees even don't desire these kinds of liberation, what to speak of material pleasures. So here also we see that Markandeya Rishi is is praying, is making a similar kind of prayer, where Lord Shiva, who is the controller of the prison house, he's saying, you can have any benediction you want. So he can give him any amount of opulence, any amount of fame, or he can even take him out of this prison house. But Markandeya Rishi is saying that he's not interested in that. Rather, he wants pure devotion to the Supreme Lord. So we might think, okay, that's nice, but you know, how is this applicable to us? We see that even for us, sometimes we are offered benedictions. You know, we might not be offered a benediction like that, where Lord Shiva comes to us and says, you know, I'll give you whatever you want. Okay, we might not be offered that, but maybe we'll be offered a 200k job. Or, you know, so we might, then actually that will be a test. Will it really help me in my spiritual life if I take that 200k job? So in this way, we will also be offered various kinds of benedictions in which we will be tested, that are we really sincere, or we just want the facilities, or we just want to be comfortable in and surrounded by nice facilities. So Krishna also will test us in various ways. Maybe not like this, but we'll be offered different temptations. So, but the test of a devotee is that they actually desire unflinching devotional service to the Lord, because that is considered to be real wealth. So the wealth, excuse me, you have to take your shoes off, and then you can come inside. Thank you. So that's actually the real wealth of a devotee. So real wealth is not how many possessions we can have, or how much fame we can have, but the real wealth is to have how much devotional service we have. So we see that even in Chaitanya Leela, Kolavichar Sridhar, he was actually externally speaking, he was a poverty stricken devotee. He did not have anything. He was selling, you know, plantain leaves to make a living. And he was making very, very little money. And whatever he made, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would also try to bargain on that. He was already selling for a low price. Whatever he was earning, 50% of that he was giving for the worship of Mother Ganges, and the rest he was, you know, for his maintenance. And even in that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was actually, you know, doing a bargain. You're selling me very expensive. And he would say, alright, okay, for you, you know, cheaper. So, in that way, we can see how a devotee is not actually, how a real devotee is not interested in mundane wealth. And even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offered him benedictions. You can have whatever you like. But he said, you know, I don't need all that. All I want is your devotional service. So of course, that is the standard set by the devotees, and that is something what we aspire to achieve and to be situated in that platform. Where when Vidur, he was offended by Duryodhan, and Duryodhan spoke very harsh words, which actually pierced his heart. So it is said that words can be sharper than a sword. Harsh words are much more sharper than a sword, and they actually really, if somebody says something to us very harsh, it can stay it can linger in our consciousness for many, many decades or years. So it is actually very important how we address each other, especially devotees. And even non-devotees, it's very important that we are actually very polite and respectful towards them. Because sometimes we can say harsh words in our dealings, become familiar with each other and say harsh words, and that can actually really affect that devotee for a long time. So Duryodhan spoke very harsh words to Vidur. He said that, you are just the son of a kept mistress. And we have actually raised you. You know, you're living on our money, on our finances. And you have actually, he accused him as being a spy. He He said that you have actually taken the side of the Pandavas and you are supporting them all the time. And so it is said he was the son of a cat mistress, because many Kshatriyas, when Kshatriyas would, they would marry the queen, many maid servants would accompany them to look after the queen, so, or the princess. And they would also produce children from those maid servants. So Vidur was born from a mistress like that. So he accused him of being the son of a kept mistress. So it is described that Vidura, he saw the internal and external energies of the Lord working simultaneously at that point of time. So he saw that the external energy of the Lord is working because Duryodhan is acting in such a way. And he saw the internal energy of the Lord when he realized that this is an opportunity for him to be free from worldly affairs, to be free from the politics, because he was like a minister and he was advising Dhritarashtra. He was giving a lot of counsel. So he saw that as the arrangement of the Lord, and that he could actually retire from life and go around traveling around pilgrimage sites. So then Vidura went traveling, and in the course of his travels, the battle of Kurukshetra took place. Everyone was annihilated, and even there was a quarrel amongst the Yadavas, and they also killed each other. So then he happened to come across Uddhava on the banks of the river Yamuna. He came across Uddhava, and they embraced each other, and he asked him about the welfare of the residents of Dwarka and the residents of Mathura. And then actually he wanted to know about Vidura was very aggrieved, because all the Yadavas they killed each other, they had died, and also how everyone in the battle of Kurukshetra had died. So he wanted to ask how that took place. But because such kind of topics are very painful for devotees, it is described that the Maushala Leela is a painful subject matter for devotees. Just like, for example, if someone who is very dear to us passes away, you know, we don't want to talk about that. Isn't it? Like, Ayendra Prabhu passed away, you know, it's not that devotees are talking about that all the time. Because it's actually a very, very painful subject matter. So even the disappearance of the Lord and his devotees is actually a very painful subject matter. So Uddhava didn't want to ask directly. So he asked him to describe the pastimes of the Lord. And so then Uddhava, right from the beginning, he describes the pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan and Mathura, and then he concludes how the Lord left the planet, and how the Yadavas annihilated each other. And during that time, then Vidura asked Uddhava to, basically Vidura asked Uddhava to describe, I think, the Chaturshloki of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and as described in the second last verse, that this is actually a factual historical event. This is not an allegory. So of course we get a lot of instruction from this pastime. So we can also see how we have been hovering in this illusory energy for countless kalpas. And Krishna is just waiting for that point when we get frustrated, materially exhausted, and so that we can take full shelter of the process of devotional service. So I'll just stop here. And any questions, comments or corrections? Okay, we'll start. Yeah, it's more senior.
You want to tell us something about the creative funding
appearance? I don't know anything, so I can't say anything. Maybe you would like to? Yes, Ravi.
Christmas time, I had little whistle on both sides, coming together in No Man's Land in my park.
Oh, that's interesting.
That actually lies into that active detective book also.
Hmm. Yeah.
And the first book will be able to fight two up to get into trenches, and that's where you get closest to being one or two up.
Yeah, thank
and
you.
The back as well.
Yeah, so if we can see how. Of course, these days it's very hard to believe that. But you know, even if that could even happen in this first or second world war, in both the first and second world war, that you know, such kind of dealings took place. So what to speak of 5,000 years ago? Yes.
The
bodies,
yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting because Kshatriyas love the opportunity to fight because it's in their nature, it's in their blood. So it is happy are the Kshatriyas to whom such fighting opportunities come unsought, Krishna says. So they are actually very, very happy if somebody wants to have a fight so they can exhibit their real nature. So and they actually respect each other's fighting capabilities. Even when if we read the Mahabharata, and if you read that portion of the battle, even the parties on both sides, they would appreciate each other's fighting skills. They would stop for a second and like glorify Arjuna for his shooting arrows in such a way, because that's the nature of Kshatriyas. And then in the evening they get together, and you know, most probably they would be glorifying each other. Oh, you shot the arrow like that, you know, you hit the club like that, that was pretty cool, you know? I really appreciate you. The next day again they're fighting. So they're exhibiting their Kshatriya prowess. So it's inconceivable in the 21st century. So warfare these days is very different. It's not like before. Even I remember even going back a few years, even in the Indian Army, that to the rank of a brigadier or even higher, they would actually go at the front of the battle. They would lead the soldiers and fight, even the rank of a brigadier. But these days, you know, they're changing all that. So such high-ranking officers should stay back. They don't want the leadership to be finished. That's the excuse. They don't want to go at the front and fight. But we see that the Kshatriyas are very, very chivalrous. Even the king would lead the way. He just won't send the poor soldiers to go and fight and die. And they're sitting somewhere, hiding in a bunker and pressing buttons, you know, and looking from cameras. So, warfare has changed a lot. And warfare these days is about, you know, about killing innocent people also. Killing people who are in the cities. A lot of the warfare takes place in the cities. Anything else? Yes, Prabhu.
I was reading that Maitreya Muni was not included already. So I was just wondering if...
Oh yeah, that's Maitreya Muni, not Markandeya Rishi. Sorry, I got it mixed up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was wondering if there's any information that Markandeya Rishi is like a pure devotee, or what his level in devotion says.
I mean, here it says he's a pure devotee. It's Lord Shiva saying. Yeah, sorry, I got it really mixed up. That's Maitreya Muni, not Markandeya Rishi. Thank you for correcting. Yeah, it says that Maitreya Muni is not a pure devotee. Yeah, he's more of a jnani. Yeah, thank you. But here it says Markandeya Rishi is a unalloyed devotee of the Lord. Sorry? This section?
The personality of Maitreya is the same.
No, it's a different personality as far as I understand. Yeah, I really got mixed up. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.